This is the Value Investor Podcast with Tracy Reinick. All things value, all the time.
Welcome back, value investors. So the best known value investor of all time, Warren Buffett, was doing interviews again last week. And if you're like me, you probably tuned into some of what he had to say. He's 87 now. So actually, you know, he's been around long enough to have decades of value investing under his belt. And just listening to some of his interviews, if you are a value investor, seems to calm us down a bit. But Berkshire Hathaway, they're minting cash again. Apparently, they now have nearly $100 billion in cash. That's in addition and separate from all their other assets, including the Burlington Northern Railroad and the Dairy Queen and See's Candy and his positions in other stocks like Apple, which he added just last year. So there's a lot of questions out there about what he should do with the money. He claims, once again, that he's having a hard time finding investments. But I know people have been having questions about why he's not buying tech firms such as the semiconductors, which we've talked about a lot on this show, and which many are trading in the single digits with the PEs. So I took a look at a couple just to like confirm, you know, my memory that they are really cheap. And I looked at Micron, which is ticker MU. That's a big cap with a $35 billion market cap. So you can't say that it's too small for him to take a position. And that has a forward P of just 6.9. As you recall, Buffett has said for almost 20 years now that Berkshire has been restricted to buying the large caps, like when he's buying positions in companies in stocks, because they just had too much cash and their assets. It's so big that buying a stock in a small cap would not really move the needle enough. When you have $100 billion sitting there, spending, you know, $200 million to buy some small cap stock isn't going to make or break your portfolio there. So that's why he's not doing it. He has bought some smaller companies outright, such as Pampered Chef, if you remember that company. They bought that in 2002 for around supposedly $900 million. But he has shied away from, like I said, buying in these smaller companies. So now pressure is growing on Buffett and Berkshire to put this cash to work. And it kind of reminds me of back in 1998-99, the last time when the growth stocks were really dominant and value seemed out of favor, or basically was out of favor. If you recall, Buffett was under attack pretty sharply in those years for being out of date, you know, not, quote, getting it, unquote, you know, being an old dude, even though he was in his 60s at that time. It seems young now, but he still preferred the railroads, his Coca-Cola, and he was still buying the newspapers and basically never took a position in the big names of the time, like Cisco and Microsoft. But in the 1990s, in the late 90s, he wasn't giving as many interviews as he does now. We've gotten kind of spoiled of hearing him on CNBC every quarter now, it seems, with Becky Quick over there. And then he'll go on other outlets too, on Fox Business and Bloomberg, to also just talk about his philosophy. And he, you know, wrote the famous op-ed in the New York Times now from 2008, saying that he was buying stocks while the Great Recession was picking up steam and stocks were really weak and selling off then. But if you remember back in the day, he used to just kind of give print interviews, and he would talk to one of his favorite reporters back then, and her name was Carol Loomis over at Fortune Magazine. So he still got the word out, just not so much on camera, not as often. So in late 1999, as he was taking all this heat for being out of touch and the old guy, he started leaking, I guess you could say, to Carol Loomis at Fortune about what he was telling his investors privately. He would give these talks to friends and investors in Berkshire about his views on stocks and particularly his tech stocks. And then he basically gave her the green light to put that out there in the form of an article, basically what one of his speeches or talks was. And I think it's instructive to look back on these comments now, because really the more things change in investing, obviously, the more they stay the same. And since this era is kind of reminding me a little bit, not of the meaning of the dot-com boom, but of the emphasis on the growth stocks and these new technologies. We always hear these disruptive technologies. And that was true in 1999, too. So he likes to talk about the big gains that were going on because we were in a secular bull market back then when he was giving these comments. And he talked about how the incredible run in stocks from 1981 to 1999, at that point, that was an annual return of 19%. He didn't believe it would last into the next 10 years at that point. But, you know, he also addressed the tech stocks of the time, which is what he was getting the most criticism for, as I've said. And what he talked about in response to that is worth repeating today, because, as I said, we're still in this kind of disruptive tech and information revolution. We now have social media companies, we have AI, we have these things that never existed in 1999, but they're just as disruptive as the actual internet was. Yes, remember, that was a disruptive technology 20 years ago now. So it's good to look back and see what he was saying then. But you know, you can say, oh, all you had to do in 1999 is pick the winners and ride them. But really, how did we know what the winners were even in 1999? You think you do now because we have a survivor's bias, basically. So we look at Microsoft now and go, oh, that was the winner. They survived. Of course, I knew that in 1999. But you might have picked Yahoo because really, that's what we were all using in 1999. Everybody was using it. Or you might have picked AOL. I mean, you've got mail. That was the huge thing. And they even named a movie after it. Everybody was using that. You might have picked eBay because that was revolutionary to be able to go on this website and buy stuff out of people's basements or whatever they were selling on there. I've never seen such a thing. But thinking or knowing that those were revolutionary, which they all were at the time, is not necessarily the same thing as making a winning investment in these. So he talked about that in 1999 in these talks, and he compared tech to two revolutionary industries from earlier in the 1900s. And the first one was the auto industry. We don't really think of it as revolutionary now, except maybe with self-driving cars. But when the auto industry came on the scene, I mean, my gosh, we had the horse for, you know, hundreds and hundreds of years. And now suddenly there was this new thing. And when you look back, you might not realize that there were, he says, up to about 2,000 different car manufacturers at one point. There were like dozens and dozens and hundreds of them trying to get into this new technology. But how would you have known who were the winners when all these companies were forming? This is his point, that it took 50 to 60 years to narrow it down to have the winners emerge into just three, at least in the United States, which were GM, Ford, and Chrysler. And then now you have the foreign makers as well, the Toyotas, the Hondas, BMW, Mercedes, all of these other companies that did survive on this whole revolution in their auto sectors. So, you know, he talks about how you had a bet correct, but you still might not have bet correct because not a lot of fortunes have been made over the years, even buying those winners, GM, Ford, or any of those. A lot of the auto stocks have not been the greatest investments. Then he also talks about the airplane industry. Again, we kind of take it for granted. We're just flying around like this has always been the case. But this is just the last 100 years in the making as well. And at one point, he says there were at least 300 airlines. This might have been globally, I'm not sure. I don't think he's talking just about the US, but globally, 300 airlines. And we kind of know how that ended. It wasn't good. He noted that from 1979 to 1999, 129 airlines filed for bankruptcy. So that was a good number of years after Kitty Hawk, obviously, and still we're still trying to determine who is going to be the winners. And even today in the airline industry, as we all know, still trying to figure that out. Air Berlin recently warned that without a big infusion of cash, they were going to go under. So we still have the bankruptcies happening. And, you know, airlines is still a little dubious, although Buffett himself Berkshire has bought three airlines in the last year, year and a half, whatever it's been, which we've talked about in the past. That's not been my favorite investment by him, but he did buy more than one, maybe also because he can't quite figure out the winners there either. But it's worth recalling these stories when we're thinking about these current disruptive technologies. But he does give one set of advice that I feel it's worth saying in a quote. I'm actually going to quote him here because this is what we can still apply to today's investing environment that he was applying back in 1999. So here's what he said. "I don't dwell on other glamorous businesses that dramatically changed our lives, but failed to deliver rewards to U.S. investors. The manufacturer of radios and televisions, for example. But I will draw a lesson from these businesses. The key to investing is not assessing how much an industry is going to affect society or how much it will grow, but rather in determining the competitive advantage of any given company and above all, the availability of that advantage. The products or services that have wide sustainable moats around them are the ones that deliver rewards to investors." So that's his moat idea. I know you've heard about it in the past, but that's his exact quote. And it does make some sense. So while we know that social media, AI, and all of this, and the internet obviously keeps impacting society, and even something like what Amazon is doing with home delivery or Uber or Airbnb, the question really is, what are the competitive advantages of these companies and how sustainable is that? So when looking at his Apple investment, for example, in this context, because this is how he's viewing it, the conclusion we can probably draw from that investment is that he now believes Apple has some kind of competitive advantage. And I would probably argue it's not really with the iPhone, as you might think, but it may be with its content business. Buffett loves the reliability of content. He loves that consistent revenue. That's why he's bought the newspapers over decades now, because the newspapers had classified ads. And that was basically, until recently, a moat for them. It was a competitive advantage. If you wanted to list your birth announcement or your wedding or your garage sale, you had to go to the newspaper. Now, not so much. He would admit that that competitive advantage has gone away. But for decades, it was one. And as an investor, you were able to reap that constant stream of revenue. Well, Apple also has that with its iTunes. And now, of course, Apple Podcasts, it has the content there that's continuously creating this revenue chain for them. And that is an advantage because obviously first place people go to look for podcasts is on Apple Podcasts these days. So right there, you can see their competitive advantage. I was also thinking about, you know, what he said in terms of other investments. If you think about his love of the railroads and that he actually owns one now, there used to be dozens and dozens of U.S. railroads, actually. If you look at the history of them since the cross-country railroad, which is about, I think it's about to celebrate its 150th anniversary or something here soon. And when you look at how many little railroads that were developed, and now we're basically down to just about four or five in the U.S., I think it is. But the big ones are, you know, Union Pacific, CSX, and Kansas City Southern. And they, too, have a competitive advantage, which is what he likes. So the tech industry has matured since 1999. I think he is looking around and looking at who are now the obvious winners. He talked a couple months ago about Amazon and about how he wished he could have invested there. Maybe that's because he's now seeing Amazon as one of these winners with the moat. But it's taken, you know, just about 20 years, a little over 20 years to get there. That's just something to keep in mind. And if you're looking at some of the disruptive technologies, you know, you can apply it to a lot of different things. I was looking at the dating apps the other day and, you know, thinking about Tinder, Match.com, OkCupid. You can actually invest in that. Match is now a public company. MTCH is their ticker. So you can buy Tinder. But Tinder was hot a couple years ago. Doesn't seem so much to be now. I don't hear it mentioned as often. You know, there's not a lot of barriers to entry there. What is their moat? Will they be around even in 5 or 10 years? We don't know. So these are the principles you can apply from Buffett's advice in 1999 to all that's going on now in these more disruptive industries. That's what I'm going to do. I'm going to keep it at the forefront of what I'm looking at, and I'm going to look for those competitive advantages. And then I'm going to drill down a little deeper to see, do they really have it there? Do they really have some kind of moat and some kind of business that for me, who's a long-term investor, might be around a while? So this is just some good advice of following Buffett down that path. And I do think it's still applicable all these years later. And it's good to keep in mind. Now, if you want to take a look at some of the companies that were mentioned here today, you can look at Micron. Its ticker is MU. There's Apple, of course, AAPL. Amazon is AMZN. And Match, as I said, MTCH. There is also the auto companies. They've been real cheap. The PEs are in the single digits again. I've talked about them, but I've also talked about how they might be a value trap here. So peak auto, be warned. But you have GM, obviously GM, and Ford with F. And then there's the railroads, UNP, CSX, Kansas City Southern, KSU. I own Kansas City Southern in my own portfolio, and I also own Amazon. So check them out and keep Buffett's advice in mind. And I'm sure he'll be around again next quarter, as he seems to always be now. And maybe we'll get some more advice, which is always, I feel, good for value investors to keep in mind. So if you want to listen to any of our other podcasts, I did cover another one on Warren Buffett just last quarter when he did talk about how he sold IBM and why they're in Apple now, and what he thought about Amazon and some of these other big tech companies. So you can check out that podcast on SoundCloud and on Apple Podcasts, of course. And until next week, I'll be bringing you some more value stocks then, and be sure to tune in.